Okay, so the question is, can I elaborate more on the space? Like using space as an object of meditation. It is mentioned in the early Buddhist texts a few times, not very much, but it's there. And I would say my favorite sutta that talks about it is called Anuruddha, the Anuruddha Sutta. So Anuruddha was one of the Buddhist chief disciples. And he was known for having psychic powers, and his samadhi was extremely good too. And he talks about this space meditation in that sutta. And his, you might say his analogy is, when you're sitting under a tree meditating, you imagine an area of space as big as all the roots of the tree under you. Like, how much space would all those roots take up for the tree? You imagine area of space, you know. And then once you can have awareness of that much space, now how about double the size of the roots of the tree. And he's referring to like all directions, you know, not just underneath you. And then likewise, several roots of a tree. Or even the size of like a town, or the size of a city, or the size of a whole country, or even out to, you know, to the vastness of way out to the ends of where the ocean is, to the ends of the world. You can even have that much awareness of space. So back at the time of the Buddha, that's about as big of an area they could even imagine. Was just kind of like the vastness of the ocean. There was no concept of like outer space yet. But when he says that, he means as big as you could possibly imagine. That was about as big as they could imagine. By the way, when they looked up in the sky and saw the clouds, they didn't think those clouds were all that far away. Like they just thought the gods were up there on the clouds, and they actually weren't too far away. But anyway, yeah. So that's in the Anuruddha Sutta, and none of the other monks ever taught me that sutta. Not my teacher. Nobody. But I did get the great advice to go and read the suttas myself. And see if it had any advice on meditating that I could use. And it turns out that awareness of space really works well for me. And so I've really kind of kept that as one of my favorites. It is there, but you have to look. Does that answer your question? It's just an awareness of the volume of space. There's no magic to this. There's no psychic powers to this. Just like you can have a sense of the space in this room, you know, out to the walls or to the ceiling. You know, you just know where that space is. And it's not like you're projecting out like a field out of your mind or something like that. It's not, you're not projecting something out of your mind here. It's just, you have a sense of the space. You know where it is. Okay, like, if I asked you like, well, can you just sense where your nose is? Well, of course, you totally know where your nose is. You have a sense of where it is. Okay, well, in the same way, you can know where these walls are. You have a sense of the space. It's just the 3D volume of this room. That's the space. Does that help?
Is it using the limits as a basis to develop the object?
Using limits, well, I would say that when you develop this more, it can go in all directions infinitely, and it can pass through walls. It passes through the floor, passes the ceiling. The Buddha does say in a whole bunch of places, make no distinction between inner and outer. Make no distinction between inner and outer. And I say, yeah, that very much applies here. Now, to start, you know, keep it simple. Maybe just have a sense of the space around your body, even 2 meters. Just 2 meters in all directions. It's as though it's like a sphere of space. But try not to imagine a sphere. Okay, don't imagine a bubble. Don't imagine, you know, this is not about imagining. This is not about picturing, but rather feeling it, sensing it. So just start maybe with that much area, and then you can experiment with it more, maybe 3, 4 meters, 5 meters. And once it gets big enough, yeah, it'll pass through the walls. And the more you can do it in every direction, the better. Like behind you, above you, below you. Don't just sense the space in front of you the way that your eyesight works. You know, your eyesight just sees in front of you. But this awareness of space, it goes in all directions. Now, if you've never really practiced this, yeah, it might feel weird. It might feel new to you. It might feel... You know, that's okay. Like, monks tend to never really mention this. There are some monks actually who do teach it now, even in Malaysia. I know Bhante Agachitya, he's starting to teach this awareness of space. Yeah, Bhante Aryadhamaka, I think he starts to teach this now too. He's been teaching it. Yeah. Now, I don't say all of you should be doing awareness of space. For some of you, it won't really help you. But I'm saying, for me, oh yeah, it works great. But what you can trust for sure is like awareness of body. And if that's perhaps feeling a little boring, maybe add awareness of breath as well. That can keep you plenty occupied for this whole retreat. If you did nothing but awareness of breath and body this whole retreat, that could still be a great retreat. Okay. Any more questions? Okay, one more.
You mentioned about a family condition, even for you with children. So, but there are very few Dhamma talk about how to overcome the negative effect. Because most of us don't advise parents anyhow. They have been conditioned by their parents. So, what is Buddha's teaching? How to negate those negative vibes or family conditions?
Okay, so the question is, how do we overcome family conditioning or negative family conditioning? The Buddha says very little about this, actually. In ancient India, there was a very clear separation of, like, either you are a sadhu, like a monk or a nun, you know. you renounce the householder life and you become a monk, or you are a householder, and it's one of the two. And the monks and nuns are kind of supposed to, once you renounce it, leave it behind, don't think about it. Perhaps they might not even go back and visit their family anymore, their parents, etc. Their attitude was kind of like, you leave that business to the householders. That's their, that's their life, that's their world. So he doesn't say all that much about the householder life, other than to say, renounce it. Now, one of the really likable qualities of Indian culture, at least traditional Indian culture, maybe not so much anymore because the world is changing so much, but if you look at traditional Indian culture, one of the things they do really well is they have really good family dynamics typically, like caring, loving families, where there's a strong sense of responsibility around, raising children and having a solid family, and everybody does their duty, and it's, the kids are raised, to be quite emotionally mature and responsible, and, that's one of the things they did well, is kind of having good functional families. So I think the Buddha didn't have to say very much to help them there. He didn't really have to teach them what they were already good at. Okay, that was one of their strengths. He just sort of assumes that that is in good shape. Now, in modern times, we cannot really just assume that. Okay, there's a lot of dysfunction in a lot of families. There's all kinds of psychology essays on this kind of thing, The importance of parents being, emotionally available to the newborn babies and, providing a stable, caring environment. That matters a lot especially for babies and young children. It's when we're a baby or a young child, that's when we're conditioned the most strongly by whatever's around us. However our parents are like, or our family, brothers and sisters, all that conditioning powerfully influences us when we're very young. And anyway, no matter what that time was like, now the responsibility falls into our hands as adults. We must make the best of the conditioning that we received. We must make the best of our ability to be mindful, our ability to bring wholesomeness, bring wholesomeness into, we want to integrate that into our life and condition ourselves as best we can. Now, when we go back to visit our family, yeah, it is the most challenging time. And I wish I had something comforting to tell you here, but there's not much I can say other than that's the strongest conditioning of all, is when you're a baby. And overriding that conditioning is going to be the most challenging. Buddhism does afford the monks and nuns the choice to basically never go back. Just never going back is an option. It's kind of a harsh option. But perhaps there's some tacit acknowledgement of just how hard that conditioning is. I'm not recommending that you abandon your parents or your family or whatever. That would be too cruel and heartless to say. But that's just how it is, you know. If anything, there's a lesson here about just the importance of newborn children having a supportive environment. It's so very important, because that's going to strongly shape the kind of person they are for the rest of their life. Very strongly. There's a saying in Arab culture, I'm not sure I quite know, I can't really say it perfectly, but it goes something like, the way that a new child is raised, that is set in stone for life. They would go so far as to say, that is set in stone. I would say it's not quite that bad, but almost that bad. You know, we're trying to make the best of it here on this retreat. We're trying to meditate. We're trying to override the past conditioning with meditation. We're trying to sort of introduce new conditioning to replace the old conditioning. You know, one of the really, really cool things about ethnic Asian culture that I wish Westerners did more. Like, if there's some husband and wife who are kind of getting along badly and they have kids, I don't know if you do this anymore, but at least in the past, those kids could go live with like an auntie or an uncle. They could go to a different family where it was more stable. Okay, so there was this flexibility, you know, like kids could be sort of transferred to a different, you know, different house. They can go stay with auntie and uncle instead. That is smart. Please don't stop doing that. Because that means so much for that kid to be in a supportive environment. In Western culture, we don't do that anymore. Like, however bad your mom and dad are when you're young, you stay with that bad mom and dad. You don't go live with your auntie and uncle. By the way, the Catholic Church did decide at this point in history, there's this exact point in history that you can identify where before that time, Westerners lived in householders very similar to a traditional kind of Asian setting where, you know, grandma and grandpa lived at home to the aunties and uncles, maybe also lived all in the same house. You know, you had these big houses. The house wasn't just for the like nuclear family, like just mother, mom, dad, and the kids. You could have the grandparents, you could have aunties and uncles, you could have these big houses. It's more like a clan, you know? A whole clan lives in a big house. Westerners used to do that too. But there was a point in history when the Catholic Church decided, okay, quick, stop that. Don't do that. And now they're going to do nuclear families. One nuclear family per household. And well, I don't want to get into a history lesson here. They had a reason for it, although it did create a lot of trouble once Yeah. Later on, it created a lot of trouble. But they were trying to fix a short-term problem. But it created a lot of trouble later on. Okay, anyway. Yeah, psychology is learning all kinds of stuff about this now, about family, structure, family, you know, healthy, raising healthy children, yeah. Buddhism doesn't have much to say about it. But Buddhism will say, whatever your duties are to your family, yes, do those duties. There's a handful of suttas about, like, being a good householder. You know, if you're a father, be a good father. Do the duties of a good father. If you're a mother, be a good mother. Do the duties of being a good mother. Etc. Like, we all have our roles, and there's always responsibilities and duties with those roles. So do those duties. Be responsible. That message is there. That's in the suttas. Yeah. So, you know, the Buddha did say, he said enough about that. You know, the Indians knew what that meant when they heard that. Yeah.